In this episode, we discuss The Odd Life of Timothy Green, the film that turns the inability to have a child into a whimsical fantasy. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy. Every single time.
You're Dan
someday,
McCoy.
Someday Stuart will learn. Yeah. And what's your name, Stuart Wellington?
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And who am I, Elliot Kalin? Why, I'm Elliot Kalin. Thank you for asking.
We should switch it around.
All three names.
All three names together again.
If we switch it around, I'll interrupt Elliot next time.
Okay.
Fair enough. Or not fair.
Someday never comes. So, welcome to the Flophouse.
Tomorrow never knows.
Let me get the
tomorrow
door.
Tomorrow never
hey,
dies.
Hey, it's our listeners at the door. They want to enter the Flophouse.
Oh, sure. Let them in, Stuart. Let them in, Stuart.
Setting the table.
Talk about meowvies.
So what do we do here? We talk about a movie.
We talk about a bad meowvie that we see.
That we ouched.
We watch a bad meowvie, and then we talk about it for about an hour.
And sometimes it stars Nicolas Cage, but this time it didn't.
No. This time it starred a cavalcade of stars.
Yeah.
But the movie...
A cavalcade
I don't know
of
if,
stars?
No, Nicolas Cage was not involved. We shouldn't talk about Cage. I'm sorry.
You got me.
I wanted to make
everyone worked up.
I just wanted to make a reference to the trailer for the movie Stolen and then move on.
You're giving everyone cage balls, Elliot. That's the problem.
It hurts for a guy when that happens.
Yeah, it does.
We watched a little movie called The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
And boy, was it odd.
It was the oddest.
His life was so odd.
Whose fucking choice was this?
It was Elliot's.
This was my
Elliot
choice.
Elliot was dead set.
Because, and I'll tell you why, because this was a movie outside of our normal comfort zone. Mm-hmm. This is a family film. This is a sappy, sentimental family film. There are no action scenes. There's no monster violence. There's no blood.
There's no Nicolas Cage.
No Nicolas Cage. I wanted us to do something that was a little bit different. Like, sometimes we step out of our zone and we do it like a little bit of heaven or
a seven pounds.
Or a Beverly Hills' Chihuahuas. And, you know, sometimes that's a little bit of magic. So I wanted us to step outside of our comfort zone this time.
And boy, was this an unusual film.
It was odd, if you will. Oddly boring.
Elliot, why don't you sum it up? Try and speed it up a little.
Okay.
Yeah, fucking get through this.
It's not a lot happens in this movie. So Jennifer Garner and
TV's alias.
And what's his face?
Joel Edgerton.
Joel
Edgerton.
Zero Dark Thirties guy.
Yeah, and Warrior, a movie I recommend.
He's in Warrior. They are a married couple in a town called Stanleyville.
With very noticeable skull structures.
Yeah.
They're very,
very defined
sharp
skulls.
Cheekbones. Cheekbones you can grate cheese on. Yeah.
And they live in the pencil capital of the world.
And we know this because there's a barn that says it. There's a pencil factory. There are giant pencils in the streets.
Pencil
the
local soccer team.
The local soccer team is
the
erasers.
And the camera pans past these things about a million times.
There's a lot of pencils in this movie. So pencil it in, won't you, and then erase it. they are a married couple, and they want to have a child very badly, but they can't. It is genetically impossible. God has taken his thumb and stuck it in her womb to stop up any babies from getting in
her
there.
Her uterus is a barren place where a seed can find no purchase.
Yeah, there's just tumbleweeds.
Thanks for making me think of a movie I actually like, Dan.
Phantasm?
Yep. So we're talking about Phantasm tonight.
So they decide they're so sad because they can't have children, which is sad.
It's very sad. And this movie starts out in a
very sad
It
starts out very
place.
Sad. It's like Up in terms of starting out sad, except not as good. They decide they're going to write down on pieces of paper the things that their ideal child would have. A great heart. He'd be funny. He'd rock. He'd win.
Yeah, some of these are pretty shallow things.
He'd be artistic.
And he would like shoot the winning goal.
He'd kick the winning goal
in
a
soccer
game.
Yeah.
And they take all these things and they put it in a little box.
In a scene that would have worked if it was in a musical, I think. I think
yes.
You brought that up.
Well, that's the thing.
Like
if
they were singing about
it. We can talk about this, but this is a movie that isn't stylized enough. It's very earnest and very realistically shot, except with like, you know, the colors are very bright and everything. But
it has all these fantasy elements, but it is super earnest and super like everyone plays it real, and it's very sad because
and
of it.
And quiet and subdued. And this is a scene that would work very well in a musical, like singing about the different traits they would want their ideal son to have. He'd have heart. Oh, he'd have such heart. He'd be good at art. He'd, you know, that kind of shit. Anyway, so I like musicals. I don't know why.
I think you were actually going to start singing about
Yes, you
it.
Did. Come on. You know, I love to sing. Mm-hmm. He would rock the house. He'd be quiet as a mouse.
Wow. The musical theater lost a lyricist when you went into podcasting.
He'd speak fluent German. Raus. Anyway, so they write it down and put it in a little box and then bury it in their garden because
in a scene reminiscent of a child burial.
What better way to open your movie than with a symbolic funeral for a child?
In a tragedy box.
And then later that night they wake up and there's a hole in the garden and some kind of dirt creature has been running around the house.
A dirt child.
Because they find dirt everywhere and there's a filthy child, like a 10-year-old child. Just
so they,
in their house,
through some kind of creepy ritual, summoned this child demon from another
they
plane.
They burned a wicker man.
We have to assume that Disney cut out the part where Jennifer Garner dropped her menstrual blood onto the ground to fertilize the soil for a human flesh. I don't know. But it turns out this little boy, he calls himself Timothy, and he has leaves on his legs because he's a plant boy.
Like a puck. Like one of your pucks.
Like one of your punks or one of your, one of your swamps things.
Yep.
You know, one of your plant man, one of your floronic mans.
One of your triffids.
The triffids had no human qualities to them. Right. They could walk, but they were just plant monsters.
One of your Audreys too.
Yeah, exactly. Your Audreys too. Anyway, one of your plants man. Mm-hmm. So he's a plant boy, and they are such very worried, anxious, hyperprotective parents, and he goes through a series of weird little incidents. He gets kind of like taunted by kids at school, but he doesn't seem to mind. He has a crush slightly older girl.
It's on his OKCupid profile.
Yeah, he's 11, and there's a 14-year-old girl that he has a crush on, which...
And they become best friends after...
Seems weird in the context of the movie.
Because she's got a weird birthmark that looks like Africa.
Like they're both different. She sees his leaves and he sees her birthmark. Mm-hmm. He draws a picture of somebody and he's super talented. He has this preternatural wisdom, like he's very serene and still.
Well, he walked out of an M. Night Shyamalan.
Kind of. He speaks precociously, like as if he's an adult, but it's one of these movies where there's like this thin tightrope between precocious wisdom and autism or mental retardation, where he kind of is like wise beyond his years in one scene, but another scene he doesn't get like how a diving board works or what soccer is, you know.
But we should watch him and figure it out in slow motion.
We should watch many, many slow motion shots of his beaming, saintly face.
But he's also like a magical child who shows up and seems to know the rules of his own existence,
but never
not
tells anybody.
Feel yeah that he needs to let anyone else.
He shows
like
up.
A Duddits.
He's a what?
Yeah. Like a Duddits.
You know,
from,
a dream catcher.
Duddits.
Oh right, I thought you meant
and
like
weirdly
the
enough. Timothy Green builds a shitload of dream catchers with his new friend.
Yeah, I thought you meant the apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz, which is a very different thing.
The apprenticeship of Lenny Kravitz.
The apprenticeship
really
of Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
Anyway. What were we talking about?
I don't know. Words that sound like other words.
So, and he seems to know the rule. He shows up. He speaks perfect English. He seems to know everything about his own mystical being, but he doesn't tell anybody, and he doesn't know much of anything about human interaction. And he manages to, through his wise, saintly presence, solve a couple people's problems. He helps heal a rift between his new dad and his dad's dad. He saves the local the local pencil factory is going to be shut down, and he inspires his parents to invent a new type of pencil made out of leaves. And
he helps an old guy shuffle off this mortal coil.
Yeah,
through
he helps
laughter.
His grandfather laugh his way into the grave.
Played by M. Emmett Walsh.
Basically, he's like the Incredible Hulk. He wanders into the town, solves people's problems, and then it's time for him to go because each time he fulfills the promise of one of the things his parents wanted him to do when they wrote out their notes, he loses a leaf. And as we all know from 1,000 words, what happens when you run out of leaves?
Yeah, you gotta die.
No.
That's why the trees all die in the winter. So in the end,
Timothy pulls a Pete's dragon and disappears, right?
Kind of. Does he disappear? He doesn't leave a body behind, right?
Yeah, he doesn't like crumble into like mulch or something.
He just turns back into that sad child cigar box that started out as.
That's true. Yeah, because they find that.
They didn't find the box. They just found the pieces of paper.
No, they find the box.
Oh, they did.
Because inside this whole story is being told. Here's your framing story.
This is perhaps one of the stupidest parts.
This whole story is being told by the parents to a woman who works at an adoption agency. In order to convince her to give them a kid,
yeah, they tell played her this, by Shora. I don't know her last name, but she was in the House of Sun and Fog.
But they are like, hey, you know what would convince them to give us a living human child? If we told a crazy story about a plant boy that grew out of our garden, and then we couldn't even take care of him, and he died.
Yeah, but if they do it really well, you got a kid on.
Oh,
the
if
way.
It's going to be an amazing
do
story.
Do you think the problem with it was they just didn't water Timothy Green?
It's possible.
For sure.
The one time we saw him in water, he was in a pool, and the chlorine couldn't have been good for him.
Yeah,
no.
But
he couldn't even really. Well, he could swim. He was just trying to trick that poor girl into coming down to get
so
kicked
she
in
could
the
kick
face.
Him in the face. Yeah. So he meets this girl by. She sees him sitting on the bottom of the pool, thinks he's drowning, goes to save him, and tries
after an amazing diving board scene
and sees
slow motion
of him just
jumping on
bouncing
board.
On that diving board for about 7 hours.
Looking like a doof.
and she starts pulling down his socks and sees the leaves on his ankle.
That's what I'd do if I was a
and
girl.
He kicks her in the head just trying to get his feet out of her hands. But they become friends. Her mother doesn't – and his mother for some reason does not approve of him having a friend.
She's like 5, 7, 10 years older than him.
10 years older than him. She's 21 years old.
No, she's Jennifer Garner is worried that this fast girl of 14 is going to corrupt her son of 11.
She has a leather jacket, I think.
Yeah, she rides around on a bicycle. Not a motorcycle, just a bicycle.
Now, this and so
in old-timey Pennsylvania, a motorcycle is rough enough.
Yeah.
Timothy Green dies. He leaves a letter behind saying, "You were great parents."
Written in pencil.
Written in pencil because the whole movie is about fucking pencils. And this is – it's weird that the main theme of this movie seems to be the importance of pencils. But
well,
and at
both
the
his
end,
parents' jobs
put
are
out by the anti-pen
lobby. That's right. The dad works at the pencil factory, and the mom
as
is
as a pencil quality inspector.
As a quality inspector, which means just picking up pencils and looking at them and then throwing them away. And the mom is the
only
tour
the highest quality of pencil.
The mom there. is the tour guide at the historic pencil house. Like, what is it exactly?
Like it's the pencil museum
but
run
it's just
by
a house.
Diane Wiest.
Well, okay, you mentioned Diane Wiest. Oh, and at the end of the movie, the adoption agency brings a kid, brings them a new daughter.
Yeah, the adoption agency is like, we believed your crazy Timothy Green story.
You know what?
So have an Asian daughter.
Your story about
why
killing a vegetable boy.
You could have just said daughter.
I don't know why you had to highlight her ethnicity.
Is it because they called her Lily?
It's funny that they call her Lily, which is the name of the Asian adopted daughter in Modern Family.
Sure. They could have called her Jade or
Katana.
Sure, fortune cookie,
Melina,
any number
all of these things.
Great Wall,
sure.
2008 Olympics,
number one happy panda,
sure.
Yeah.
Golden luck dragon food, happy joy sun,
all of these things.
So,
Chun Li,
whatever.
That's a name. Yep,
Mushu. Too far, Dan.
Okay,
it's Eddie Murphy's character from Mulan, and that is shocking. We didn't say Mulan before this.
We should have said Mulan. I don't think she's Chinese. The girl in the movie, she looks like she's like Indonesian. You know?
Yeah,
sure.
Probably.
What's the IMDb after this thing?
Yeah, well, IMDb it. but you mentioned Diane Wiest, and we'll get to the hair on her chin. Now, there's a big cast in this movie. There's a really good cast. You got Diane Wiest.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in it? Ron Livingston.
Yeah.
Rosemary
DeWitt. Rosemary
DeWitt.
David Morse.
David Morse.
Rosemary
Emmett Walsh.
Emmett Walsh.
Rosemary DeWitt playing her perfect character of the disapproving sister.
The disapproving snobby sister, yeah. It's like Rachel getting married, decided to move to a town made out of pencils, and disapprove of a plant boy.
You got
Common.
Your
and Common is in it as
hip-hopster.
The as the soccer coach who takes an immediate dislike to Timothy Green. Here's the weird thing about the movie. Oh, and also Lin-Manuel Rivera, I think his name is, the creator of In the Heights. And star of In the Heights when it opened is also in this, in two scenes as a botanist.
Yeah. But, and it's not, you know, an actor, but as you noted, the cinematographer won back-to-back Academy Awards. And this is, I have to say, a beautiful-looking movie. Like,
it is a lovely movie. If any movie captures the beauty of autumn, it's The Odd Life of Timothy Green. If any movie fails to provide a story to go with those autumn colors, it is The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
Sad movie about a plant boy that has some beautiful trees.
The weird thing
colors.
Is also, and Dan made the point where we were watching the movie, instead of solving everyone's problems, this family should have just moved out of the pencil town.
Yeah.
Because everyone there is a jerk.
That would have solved all
this
problems.
This is a depressed the town are, based on a pencil factory that's clearly failing.
Well, there is no more
no
antiquated technology
factory.
Than a pencil.
Yeah.
Maybe a rock that you use to open a coconut mm-hmm. is more antiquated than a pencil.
But then also, the main problem with this this family is you got Rosemary DeWitt, who is a bitch about this new kid.
And
to
how
Jennifer
how much
Garner.
Better her kids are.
Yeah, and then
I
David
mean, her
Morse.
Kids are really great, though. He plays the bassoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He plays, I don't know, violin or
and
some
and the
shit.
Best that the best that Timothy Green can do is hit a percussive instrument to the beat of Lowrider so that his family can sing along with him.
And then inspire yeah. the actual version of the song Lowrider to just start playing
spontaneously play.
Well, apparently these are very low-rent wishes, by the way. There's like, oh, we want our son to rock, and that translates to him
to
being
Lowrider,
able
I think you're being charitable to say that Lowrider
is
rocking.
Rock. Yes.
No, but that's what I'm saying. These are low-rent wishes, and like all he can do is do the cowbell part to Lowrider.
Which is a pretty mellow song.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of rocking in that.
But then you got the dad's dad, David Morse, is just a dick about
he's
everything.
He's just a jerk.
Yeah, he's yeah. a dick. Like his
is
son,
your typical
by,
abusive dad,
played by movies Joel Edgerton, should have just been like, "Fuck this guy. I don't need like he doesn't. I don't know why he
yeah.
is pursuing his
and
father's
like,
love so much.
The
I don't pursue my dad's love all the time, Dad. If you're listening, I didn't mean that.
Dad, if you're listening, love me, please. I'll do anything. I'll do anything. I'll kick the winning soccer goal. Listening. I'll rock. I'll be artistic. Whatever it takes.
I'll have
I'll
leaves
be
a- on my legs. Whatever. I'll glue them on.
There's.
I'll cowbell it up.
So, like Ron Livingston, who runs the pencil factory, is a jerk. Common, who is the soccer coach, hates Timothy Green, will not put him into play for no real reason. Like, he's not good at it, but it's a kid's soccer team. Like, everyone's supposed to play, you know? And when he finally puts him in, he says, "You stand there and don't move at all." Like, that's the instruction.
To the point
he gives
that he ignores the ball and the players that are actually trying to score goals,
he just
and
keeps
focuses on keeping this kid from moving. I mean, he probably should have focused harder because he ends up scoring a goal for the other team. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. By the way, we already mentioned that Timothy Green dies, but spoiler alert. When he kicks the winning goal, it's for the other team by accident.
You know,
after
be careful what you
big laughs,
for,
after there were big laughs there. That was like the comedic set piece of
after
the movie.
He showboats playing soccer for a long time, Timothy Green.
Yeah, he's really good at soccer. He's not so good at knowing which direction he's
maybe
facing.
He just
like
needs
for a second, he has to power up first from the sun, and then he does
that's
all
true.
These fucking fancy footwork.
He does. He gets
to
his
the
power
point
from
that
the
other
Earth's
coach
yellow sun.
Is like, yeah, the other coach is like, fucking take him out. Like,
yeah.
kick him in the knees.
Swipe
which
his
is
legs.
Crazy.
Sweep the legs.
This is a kid's soccer game.
Also, the fact that their team is called the Erasers because it's a pencil town.
That makes
the other
sense.
Team is called the Bone Crushers.
What does that town mean?
I assume
you,
that's
I
the town that makes the roller coaster from Nothing But Trouble. It's the only explanation I can come up with.
Accurate. It's an accurate reference.
I mean, they have a lot of aggression because that's the only thing they've ever made as a town
yeah,
ever.
Is just one roller coaster for Judge Quincannon.
A great movie.
For maybe the worst movie ever made by a movie studio.
So bad.
Now, there's a great cast in this movie, but they don't get much to do. The script is pretty underwritten and half-baked. The direction is kind of subdued and not very like we were saying, this should have been like a heightened fairy tale of a movie, maybe a musical, but it's just like everyone kind of just like, yeah, Timothy Green, wow, you're a real interesting kid.
I don't think you would have lost anything by making it a musical.
No, you could only have gained. Like, this is one of the few movies where I'm like, if they transferred this to Broadway to make it into a musical, they'd have a real chance at improving it, because basically just keep the idea of a plant kid and put some songs in there, change the ending so he doesn't die. You got yourself a hit. Call it Hairspray 2, the musical, or maybe Book of Mormon 2. Yeah.
Well, you can,
the
you
odd
can
life
let
of-
him die for a while, and then he shows up at the end, and he's like, I'm not really dead.
Well, I mean, like,
it's spring again. Spring has sprung. I'm back. It's spring.
So you get the sad, then you get the happy. That's how
well, there
works.
Were like yeah. a lot of reviews of the new Blu-ray of Little Shop of Horrors with the original ending that pointed out that it's a lot less harsh on Broadway to kill your main characters because they show up then at the end
to take a bow. That's true.
And so, like, I mean, the same thing for Timothy Green. He's like, oh, okay, you know, oh, Timothy Green's still alive. There he is, bowing and waving at the audience.
Yeah,
that'd be fine.
You don't have a crazy overreaction.
I mean, this movie takes itself so seriously that we discussed while we're watching. Like, I don't know who this movie's for.
Yeah.
It's not for kids. It's not for adults. Well, because it's desperately sad. It's about...
It's too sad for kids, and it's too, like, light, whimsical kid movie for adults.
Yeah, but the first...
And I like kids' movies.
Kids, like, when I was a kid, I watched, like, Little Monsters all the time. I don't know, yeah. Goonies.
Yeah, and, like, Showa. Lots of movies that are pretty harsh, but still...
But the first 15 minutes of this movie, in particular, are very sad. It's about... Two desperate, like a man or woman who desperately want a child, who can't adopt, can't have kids on their own.
Well, you don't know that they can't adopt.
I think that was part of the problem. Like they weren't.
I mean, I wouldn't sell them a kid.
You don't realize adoption is not selling them a kid.
Wait, what?
No, I think it was just.
But
that
they're like, but they're, you know, like drinking wine, like trying to cheer each other up, talking about how amazing their kid would be if he existed.
Yeah, it's a sad scene.
And then
they
put those things in a box and they bury it.
Like,
and that's how the movie starts. This is a family movie.
Well, I'll have your, like...
They're burying their dreams.
Except, like, a better version of this of that opening is Up, where aside from the scene at the beginning where the two kids meet, the next whole sequence is them growing older, not being able to have a child, getting old, and then the wife dying. It's the saddest 7 minutes, but it's
but
so...
at least that has, like, them being in love. I mean, like...
Yeah, well, the thing is, it makes you care about the characters so that when it's sad, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, like, I felt something, as opposed to just, like, let me drop you into the sad moment first. They're super depressed and sad, and you don't know these people. You don't like them, probably. Their cheekbones are way better than yours.
So if you're going to watch this movie, order your dinner so it arrives about 20 minutes in, so it's happy again.
So you're not too busy crying in your food.
And then we're going to introduce you to a plant boy who will die.
And also, but like, a plant boy who, I mean, it's a kid actor, so I'm not talking about the performance necessarily, but like, the character lacks charisma. This is not a kid you want to hang around.
Well, he's got
he's not a kid
on
you
his
like.
Legs, dude. What else do you want?
But he's like,
what do you want out of
he's
kid?
Like not a kid. Well, here's the thing is, there's a problem in a lot of movies that are about kids where...
Like a bowl cut? You want him to have a bowl cut? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, one, have a bowl cut. Two, have a slingshot hanging out of his back pocket. Backwards cap, sunglasses, skateboard.
You probably want him to be 20% more batical.
Well, that's the thing, actually, is
choose bubble gum.
Choose Big League Chew. And
somebody's got to.
Is that kids are little jerks, and they... And I like kids, but like... A lot of movies make their kid main characters too nice to the point where they become either cloying or boring or just not real. Like, this kid is supposed to be a magical kid, and yet he still feels too weirdly innocent. It's kind of similar to a movie like Benjamin Button where the character is, like, bizarrely innocent in a way that doesn't make sense. Like, real kids get into trouble and do stupid things, and, like, if there is one scene of Timothy Green, like, getting into trouble or breaking something or making a mistake himself, then it would instantly make me like the character more. As it is, he never becomes a character. He's literally just this magic, you know, he's like a Bagger Vance type character.
And if you're going to include a character like this, you shouldn't have sequences that are told kind of from his point of view because he's not a person. Like, if you shouldn't have these scenes of him running around with his friend, the million-year-old girl...
What?
You know, the chick with the birthmark. Like, I don't care if he's falling in love. He's like a weird magical angel character. Like, he's a duddits.
Yeah. If it's going to be about his effect on the other characters, then don't worry about his perspective.
Yeah, focus on his parents, the sad ones.
But in a way, this movie was all worth it, and I'll tell you why. Worth every dollar poured into it and every minute we spent
with
it.
Call it up?
Call it up. You see, there's a certain scene at the end. It seems they're going to close the pencil factory. Everyone's going to be out of work, or are they? Because the parents have invented a new pencil made out of leaves, and...
Wait, what?
It's a new pencil made out of leaves.
A pencil made out of leaves?
A pencil made out of leaves. They melt. They literally melt leaves down, mold them into a pencil
mortar,
shape.
Mortar and pestle.
And then it's a pencil. And they're going to make an announcement. We're going to keep the factory open with this leaf pencil. And the factory owner says, and my son, Ron Livingston, invented it. And they've
He says, my son, Ron Livingston?
Well, he doesn't say Ron Livingston.
I got to hand it to Ron Livingston. His performance of that moment is pretty great.
It's pretty great. He's literally dancing on stage. It's a little bit like... what can I think of his name at the moment? Sam Rockwell in Iron Man 2, when he's literally dancing on the stage. Like, there is no better way to make me love what an asshole your character is than for him to get on stage and dance before making an announcement. But Timothy Green, they wrote down that he would be honest to a fault, which is the reason why when he drew a beautiful portrait of Diane Wiest, he had put hairs on her chin. Even though
she's got like a cool goatee.
But even in the movie, she doesn't really have, like, they didn't bother to put fake hairs on her chin.
Yeah, it was weird.
So it just feels like he draws like a billy goat beard onto her. It's not like one or two hairs. Like, she looks like mini ZZ Top.
She's got a Van Dyke hose.
She's like the Red Devil paint mascot. But anyway, so Timothy Green, he can only be honest. So he gets up and he says, no, my parents made that pencil. You didn't. And there's a back and forth where they both try to prove.
He grabs the mic in front of an audience of the most bored-looking extras I've ever seen.
They cannot.
They're not even looking at him while he talks.
They're literally just thinking about something else. And he wins his case, and Diane Wiest has... And he wins his case by showing them that he's got leaves on his legs.
Well, yeah, like...
They've kept it a secret
Diane
all this
Wiest
time.
Is going to arbitrate this. She's like, Ron Livingston, how did you get this idea? And he's like,
and Ron Livingston,
there's leaves. I'm thinking about leaves, and they're all around. Or, like, he doesn't have an answer.
And the whole time he keeps interrupting the kid and saying, and just making fun of the fact that the kid fucked
it's
up
a bad
the soccer,
soccer
game.
Player.
Like, that's the best way to play what a
Are
jerk he
is.
Are we going to
believe this kid who can't even win a soccer game?
This is also a guy.
This town hall meeting comes down to a guy making fun of a kid for being shitty at soccer.
And there's a scene earlier where he's talking and he's drinking coffee out of a mug that just says "The Boss" in big letters on it. Like, I wish this movie had been told from his point of view. That would have been
so great.
The
story about how a weird kid ruined his life.
And the parents... So Diane Wiest...
Then the kid does, so it's a happy ending.
And just the end scene is him dancing on Timothy Green's grave.
He doesn't even have a grave.
I guess
the whole earth is his grave.
Yeah, this planet is his burial plot. So Ron Livingston says there are leaves everywhere. It's not a convincing story.
Yeah.
But then Jennifer Garner's like... well, he's a boy with leaves on his legs. Also not convincing. And so Diane Wiest is like, I'll be the judge of whether he has leaves on his legs. But most of the leaves have fallen off because he's accomplished his checklist goals. But she finds
one
last little leaf on his leg. Mm-hmm. And she says...
She says the words, and I wrote it down so I would have it exactly as she says it. Diane Wiest says, if this boy can have a leaf on his ankle... Then we can make a pencil out of leaves.
Which doesn't make sense.
It brings the house down.
And everybody applauds. But it's always like...
Including us at home and probably everyone in homes everywhere in America.
We were just high-fiving, just chest-thumping. Yeah. Yeah, we spiked a football. It was amazing.
It's true.
It was like
it's
New
true
Year's.
What she says. If that boy can have a leaf on his ankle, then we can make a pencil out of leaves.
It doesn't make any sense. They were
Logical
already
thinking.
They were already announced, we're going to make these leaf pencils before they knew Timothy Green had a leaf on his ankle. But even so, it has nothing to do with it. Well, yeah. Timothy Green, what an odd life. No. It's a story of too stupid over whatever.
By the way, these leaf pencils are stupid. they would be very hard to write with.
They're kind of big chunks of pencil.
Yeah, they're awkwardly shaped. I would not want to write with a leaf pencil.
Well, it's their
so the problem with it is because they're not useful pencils.
This is not ergonomics.
Oh, okay.
Dude.
Well, they could just they could shape it differently.
The pencil has been developed over thousands of years.
I don't know about thousands of years.
We're gonna change it up just because of this odd Timothy Green comes in.
His life is very odd, Dan. You have to admit. Yeah. First,
and,
he was.
Hey, where do they put the eraser on this thing, huh? If it looks like a leaf.
Mm-hmm.
At the
just
end,
because he's a plant boy, doesn't mean he knows pencils.
Where the stem would
it just
go, I guess.
Doesn't stick out of the side.
No. Now here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every movie like this, where a character shows up, solves problems through magic, and then dies. Pete's Dragon. You keep going back
to.
Your Pete's Dragonses and your...
Bagger Vance.
Your Bagger's Vance. Your Shorts Circuit.
Yeah.
And so your Batteries Knots and Klutzes. They're all essentially Christ parables.
Yeah.
I think this is the weakest Christ parable maybe I've ever seen.
More than Short Circuit?
Way more than Short Circuit. In Short Circuit, he actually comes back to life at the end.
What about in Short Circuit 2?
Short Circuit 2, he comes back gold-plated. Literally, okay, he's ascended to heaven and returned.
Also in Short Circuit
and he becomes an American citizen.
In Short Circuit 2, we learn that it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken.
Yeah, that's true, Dan.
He also
anyway,
runs out of rap, so what else? Yeah.
So there's only two movies that have the balls to end with their science fiction made-up character taking the citizenship oath. That's Short Circuit 2 and Mac and Me.
Those Mac and Me giant sea monkeys are now
they can vote, just like you. They have social.
Their vote cancels out your vote.
They have social security, and they are incredibly conservative.
They are racist.
They are racist.
That's the weird thing.
Misogynist.
Once they got in the door, it closed behind them. They don't care.
They closed the airlock right behind as soon as those Mac and Me aliens came in.
Just keep them in Arizona where they're from, right?
Well, he just goes, "Don't steal my space job." That's what he says, I guess. Anyway,
they're robots, I guess,
Max
right?
And me.
They're robot. Well, like, there's a little bit of Short Circuit in there too. I have to imagine Johnny Five is the same way. He's like, "But take away my gun," because he's got shoulder-mounted missiles.
Yeah, exactly. It's an extension.
There's
going to
be
my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead shoulder.
Yep.
That's what he says. And Johnny Five is alive at the moment, President Obama.
The only thing that disassembles a bad guy with a shoulder-mounted gun.
It's a good guy with a shoulder-mounted gun.
I was going to say it, but that's true.
Yeah. So anyway, Timothy Green, maybe one of the lamer Christ parables in children's film.
Yeah, they didn't even give him. They didn't even bother to give him JC initials.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Jimothy
Johnny Cabbage.
Green.
Johnny Cabbage.
Johnny Cabbage.
That was the working title, I think.
But also, like, is it too? Like, they didn't really make very much of him being a plant. Is it too much to have him put down roots in one scene? Too much for him to grow a flower in his hair or something? Mm-hmm. Like, really plant it up, you know? Make the most out of this stupid concept you have.
I think they should have, when casting the spell and writing down things, they should have written down something that was kind of a non sequitur that they would have had to spend more time, like, showing how he accomplishes this goal.
Like what?
I don't know, like...
ride an elephant or something?
Like, maybe because they're killing this bottle of wine, maybe they're like, yeah, maybe, you know, he makes elephant sounds when people talk to him, or I don't know.
Why would they want that?
Weird.
Or maybe he's got a really cool long ponytail.
That's what every parent wishes for their child.
Cool long ponytail. Yeah. Just a rat tail hanging off the back of his head.
Totally awesome,
If late night Walmart trips are to be believed, then you're right.
See, the problem I have is I worry about the little girl who becomes their child at the end because they're going to be so disappointed in her lack of plant-based talents. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, okay, so we're really looking forward to being your parents because we know you're going to rock. Actually, I'm just a kid. I don't rock. Well, but you're a gifted artist. No, I'm not. Really good at soccer? No, I can't do that. Do you at least have leaves on your legs? And you'll inspire us to create a new type of pencil that saves the town. No, I'm just a kid. They're going to want to send her back to the orphanage.
You know what?
Give us a chia pet. We'll teach it how to go to school. We'll be okay.
So there's going to be conspiracy theories in that town as to why that kid disappeared, right?
The government took him. Yeah, it's got to be.
To study his leaf-based
See, if I was going to do a sequel, it would be called The Odder Life of Sammy Brown. And that would be another kid in town who thinks that the government stole Timothy Green and starts a militia, you know, to free Timothy Green and blows up a federal building. And then I guess he would go to jail.
Well, that's too bad.
I guess it's really more the Timothy McVeigh story.
I guess it's not too bad that he goes because people probably got hurt.
I don't know about saying political screed.
Nobody gets hurt, and
I just have a few pamphlets for you to read.
Sammy Brown dies at the end, right?
Oh, of course. The shootout with the police.
His time here on this planet was done, Dan.
That's the thing is,
Timothy accomplished everything.
You gotta teach kids the circle of life.
Timothy Green keeps saying, like, I don't have a lot of, like, he basically knows he doesn't have a lot of time on Earth, and you wonder why he's not doing something more useful.
Rather than, you know, like, cycling around with his girlfriend and soaking in the sun.
Kicking soccer balls. Although, I guess, if you only had one day left, would you try something big, or would you just enjoy the simple pleasures of cycling around with your 14-year-old girlfriend, soaking in the sun?
I mean, he
you get only one shot, you don't stop, you never let it. It's your moment, you own it.
He changes what I'm assuming is the entire pencil industry of the United States of America, Elliot.
Well, that's actually
the sequel. Revolutionizes non-pen-based writing.
The sequel I would like to see, all malicious stories aside, would be called The Odd Life of Timothy Green 2. Green's back, gotta attack. And he comes back. The town is super wealthy from this new leaf pencil, and they've let it go to their heads. It's just parties and liquor and blow and hookers, and Timothy Green has
to... A montage of people smashing computer screens with pencils?
Just because they can. And Timothy Green brings his wrath down because they have forgotten his teachings. I think that's what would happen.
All right. Well, I think that it is time to make our final judgments on this movie.
good movie.
I kind of don't remember the movie now that I have these bizarre and scary versions that I've come up with.
Good, bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie we kind of liked. What do you think, Elliot?
I think it was a bad movie, but it's, like I said in 1,000 Words, like I like this type of fantasy story done set in modern day, and I wish Hollywood would do more of it. I just wish they had heightened it more, made it more out of the ordinary as opposed to just a kid who happened to have leaves on his ankles.
Sure, what do you say?
I'll agree that it's bad, and I'm going to touch on something you talked about while we were watching it, is that it seems more competently made than most of the movies we watch. Like, it looks pretty good. There's a lot of actors that are normally pretty good in it. But it is just so, like, the script is so bland and flat. It doesn't really make a movie.
And you want to give the movie points for being very earnest and very unironic. There, except for the lowrider scene, there's like no pop culture references. There's no scene where, like,
nothing to date it for when people watch it 100 50 years from now.
Yeah, 100 years from now, when people wishing to know how we lived in the 21st century watch Timothy Green, they'll be like, this could have been shot yesterday, except they don't have space cars. but also, like, there's not a lot of, like, snark to it. The characters are well-meaning, like, they want to love each other. It's not... There's
nothing at all that could be in any way possibly offensive.
As I believe you read in a comment on IMDb.
By IMDb user Boba_Fett1138.
It means there were 1137 to 38 Fets before him. But you want to give them points for doing an earnest film and not doing like a Alvin and the Chipmunks type, like, edgy movie.
Glad that you're giving Simon the credit out of the Chipmunks.
Look, Simon was always the glue that held the Chipmunks together, but it's just they don't. The story is so weak. Damn. Yeah.
I mean, I think I'll give it a marginal good bad, just because I think that this concept is so crazy and it's played so straight that I think that you possibly could get a little enjoyment out of
it's pretty the of kind of the last 20 to 30 minutes. I wish the movie was as crazy as those 20 to 30 minutes. Because it's kind of dull before then.
That boy has leaves on his ankle line really got you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. Before we get on to
It's rare when a single line of dialogue can elevate a movie from bad to good bad. But if Diane Weiss is talking about
madness.
A razor's edge.
I want to briefly, before we get into our letters, mention a couple of plugs on behalf of All Things Comedy. They've added a couple of new podcasts. The Champs Podcast with Neil Britton, Masha Kasher, and DJ Doug Pound. And also Soccer Comics.
That's a score.
Soccer Comics with comedians Ian Edwards and Jason Gillerns.
They'll probably have a lot to say about Timothy Green.
Yeah.
Well, with all the soccer in it.
You should probably check it out. Probably a lot of Timothy Green... fanfic over at the Soccer Comics.
Over at their new podcast, The Greenhouse. Nothing but Timothy Green all the time.
And you can find all that
by Tom Green
at allthingscomedy.com. But now it's time to move on to our letter segment, the Flophouse Movie Mailbag. Everyone's favorite, especially Elliot's.
It is my favorite, especially Elliot's.
Our favorite non-song-based section of the podcast.
I think there should be a song. I don't know, guys. I know I'm outvoted here, 2-1, but something tells me there should be a song about letters.
This first letter.
Read out the mail. It's hail of letters. Better read those letters. Letters together. Letters for all. Letters, so tall, this stack of letters, let's read them and try to get some of them read. Letters!
Okay, thank you. This first letter is from Paige, last name withheld. It's titled, You're My Only Horror Movie Hope. Dearest Flophouse guys and house cat, I've searched and I've searched, but I've never found nowhere on earth that can tell me the name of a fantastic horror movie I saw when I was about 20.
Let me help. It's called Castle Freak.
Let me just ask you
this. Freak ripping his own dick
off.
Did
they mention a ding-dong being ripped off and not really happening on screen?
She says, can you tell me what it was? I'm hoping between the three of you that someone, probably Stuart, will know what I'm talking about. I'll give you some info. It was about a rather cliched mad scientist who clichéity creates the perfect man. The dialogue was horrible, as you'd expect on TV in the middle of the night in some hotel horror tale. But here's the beauty, literally, of the movie. The man-made man is stunning. He's a patchwork of different colored skins, and the makeup artist did him full justice. He's not disgusting or gory. He's beautiful, a beautiful quilt of a man. I feel the title is something like Dr. Patches, but that's turned up nothing at all. Please help. I listen religiously and tell as many of my friends as will tolerate being told. I ask in return only your help in rediscovering this movie. I'm sorry it doesn't have any ripped off genitalia or exposed boobs to provide intrigue.
There's no boobs
in
that
movie.
If I ever make a horror movie in your honor, I'll be sure to include those and a loudly meowing but never seen cat just to say thank you. What has two thumbs and lives in fear of the Flophouse ending? Probably lots of people, but specifically me. Oh, Paige last name.
Thanks,
was
Paige,
held.
For writing in. Now, that movie I hoped would be called, well, I don't remember the joke I was going to make.
Okay.
So we know the movie's not Jekyll and Hyde together again.
It's not Dr. Patches.
We know it's not Wax or the Discovery of Television Among the Bees. Mm-hmm. So it's a movie that's not one of those two movies.
We know it's not Wampier.
It's probably not Castle Freak, but read the entire letter again. Maybe it'll jog. No, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably not M. Hulot's Holiday. Now there
that's not a horror movie.
Now, there was a Sci-Fi Channel original movie that I think Mark Paul Gosselaar was in. That was a Frankenstein movie where he did have patches all over him like that.
Okay.
And I wonder if that was it, but I don't know. I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
If it was called Frankenstein or if it was called like Patchwork Man.
I read this in part because I feel like if we open this up to the Flophouse listening audience, maybe they'd be able to help. And if you get on the Flophouse Facebook page, perhaps we can, crowdsource.
Okay, let's
this
see. It's not
thing.
Gorgo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not.
It's not Morgo.
It's not Morgo. It's not Morgana the Kissing Bandit, which is not a movie but a person. It's not Zorro the Gay Blade. It's not the Hot Rock. It's not Dollar Sign.
All right. Well,
starring Robert Redford.
Well,
oh no, that's starring
all of those.
Not Robert Redford. Robert Redford's in the
move
Hot
on
Rock
to the next letter.
Let's
which
see, it's
is
not
drawing,
Saddles.
I'm currently drawing a blank.
It's not Spaceballs.
But that doesn't mean I'm not going to go home and utilize every.
You are not
resource
sleep
my
till you find this
disposal.
Out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not Ilsa, Harem Keeper of the Oil Sheets.
This next letter is titled "Intellectual Property Theft."
I want to suggest first. Let's take this gauntlet. If anyone is trying to remember the title of a movie in the future, send us a letter, and maybe you'll hear the answer a couple months later.
This letter's titled
"See, it's not Buford's Beach Bunnies."
Sure, starring Tom Hanks' brother.
Yeah,
this
it's
is
not Swamp Thing 2.
From Mike, last name withheld. Just wondering, has Stuart considered taking legal action against MGA Entertainment for stealing his idea for a spellcasting brat? And he includes a link to http://www.bratzillas.com. Bratzillas.com. Bratzillas.com. Stay floppy.
Okay.
Mike, last name withheld.
Mm. Okay, well, I can't click on that link because you just read it out loud.
I went to bratzillas.com.
Okay, paint me a picture.
As if you had never been there before.
It was a bunch of witch brats.
Wait, say this again.
Which brats were there? Yeah, which brats were they, Dan? How are we? Wait, say again. What were they?
They're high fiving, but they shouldn't be.
What was it?
Wait, the brats are high fiving.
Brats, lady brats in a conical hat.
A comical hat, well, like a beret, like a beanie,
flying around on broomsticks. Witch brats.
Wait, how are we supposed to know? You're telling us.
So spellcasting brats.
Okay.
I honestly think it's funny that the website is bratzillas.com and they're witch brats rather than giant lizard
monster
brats.
Yeah, that doesn't make
any
sense.
Odd.
I mean, are you saying that a giant lizard can't have bratitude?
Yeah, come on.
Are you suggesting this, Dan?
Look, everyone can have bratitude.
Yeah,
okay.
Inside of us.
If they believe.
Yeah, if you look deep enough.
Speaking
Stu,
of,
what do you think? I mean, why?
I might be able to take legal action against MGA, MGA, MGM. Who am I doing this against? I got no one I'm suing.
No, just send a lawsuit. Just write to everyone.
Yeah, I think we see what the problem is here.
Love, Stuart.
Oh, okay.
P.S. You're sued for my witch brats.
Put a little bit of sugar on that salt.
Love, Stuart. Yeah. Here's a signed 8x10.
Hey, you catch more lawsuits with honey than vinegar, you know? Signed 8x10. So, okay, speaking of, the movie list named earlier wasn't Godzilla Raids Again.
All right. Well,
it's not Godzilla's Revenge. So it's not Godzilla vs. Destroya. Neither is it Godzilla vs. Biollante.
This letter is titled it's Listener from Another Continent.
Candyman 2 Farewell to Flesh.
It's from Gareth, last name withheld. He says, hey guys.
It's not Harry and the Hendersons.
Just wanted to say thanks for taking time out of your busy schedules to meet up. I had a great time and really enjoyed seeing Brooklyn. They say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but in this case that wasn't true, except my girlfriend hasn't stopped talking about how handsome Stuart is.
Aww, whoops.
Should have been expected, really. I forgot to make one movie
Stuart,
recommendation.
Stuart, you said you would turn it down.
I forgot to make one movie recommendation, though. Being from England, I want to recommend something my country has produced, but not something that's already well known. As such, I would recommend the 1982 animated movie, The Plague Dogs. I saw it earlier this year, and it really grabbed me. It's from the same team behind Watership Down, and is based on a novel by the same author. It might not be the most upbeat movie ever made, but I loved it, and it really is.
Really? From the same people who made Watership Down? English. It's not upbeat?
If you would like to see it, but would have trouble finding it, I could put my DVD copy up on Rapid Share. I don't recommend it.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
But anyway, thanks again. Keep up the good work, and enjoy those pencil sharpeners. Now, this is from Gareth.
I still got mine.
Yeah, me too. Mine's on my desk at work.
Yeah, that movie, I remember seeing Plague Dogs when I was a kid. I had like, you know, the cool uncle who had a whole bunch of board games in his basement.
Uncle Buck.
Yeah, he let me watch it while he was making me giant-sized pancakes with a shovel. And I was horrified. It is super duper sad. So if you like being a kid and watching really sad-ass fucking shit about dogs... watch Plague Dogs.
Yeah, unless you want to grow up to be like Stuart, you gotta warp your brain.
I think
early.
We all do. But maybe you want something more upbeat, like When the Wind Blows.
Yeah.
So thanks, England.
Thanks, England, for making depressing cartoons. And also Wallace and Gromit.
No, but I did want to read this in thanks to Gareth, who we met in person.
I actually unfortunately didn't get the chance, and I apologize, Gareth, that I couldn't make it that night. I had a family thing that got in the way.
Your miniature motorcycle broke down.
But he made a point.
Look, it's so hard to get places when you're mouse-sized. You need your tiny motorcycle.
He made a point of during his time in
America,
the colonies, if you will.
Nope, not since 1787.
To stop by and say hi to
1781,
us.
1781, I guess.
And bring us some die-cast models of some British things that are also pencil sharpeners.
So if anyone is from another country...
I try to get him drunk.
Yeah, I don't know how... Successful.
I always try and do that when fans come visit me.
So if anyone's from another country and you're a fan of the show and come and visit us, bring us a tiny souvenir.
If you're from this country and you're a fan, go fuck yourself.
Whoa! Whoa!
We don't need it.
I don't know if I'm endorsing
this.
Yeah,
Stuart and Elliot do not endorse Dan's hatred of the fans.
So this last letter
what
of the
movie
evening.
Could it be? It's not Masters of the Universe.
This last letter of the evening.
It's not Justin Bieber Never Stop Believing or whatever
comes
it's called.
From Ben, middle name withheld, Newman.
That's the whole title?
I think so.
This gentleman writes, Dear Stuart Wellington's Flophouse.
Oh, wow.
Wait, whoa.
I've been listening to your podcast Thanks. For a few months now, and while I enjoy it, there have been some disturbing trends in recent episodes I think should be addressed. Firstly, there used to be 3 or 4 episodes a day I could listen to.
What?
Whereas now, there's only one every couple of weeks or so.
On Dan's head.
I can only assume that as the podcast has become more popular, you've all become rich and lazy, particularly Dan, who I know does the least work of the group.
He does no work at all.
But a far more worrying change has been the gradual sanitizing of the podcast, and what I can only assume is an attempt to appeal to more family-friendly and tween markets.
I mean, we've been swearing and talking about ding-dongs being ripped off.
Totally.
In hindsight, the announcement that BigSausagePizza.com was no longer sponsoring the podcast was the beginning of the end for a saucier, more adult Flophouse.
Saucier, no pun intended.
And before I knew it, you were dropping
You don't want too much sauce on one of those pizzas, or else you're going to burn somebody's fucking scrotum off.
Before I knew it, you were
burn
dropping
it off, really?
It'll crisp off and float away like a leaf.
horrible.
You were dropping my favorite features left and right. Gone was Dan's Taylor Lautner segment, where he would sigh mournfully over visions of Lautner in short shorts while rubbing his hooks together.
That still happens, just not on the podcast.
Replaced by
rubbing his hooks together.
Replaced by aggressively homophobic rants and a thinly veiled attempt to satisfy your new Christian audience. Gone were the racist Elliot's sordid tale of sexual misadventures with his on-again, off-again girlfriend Anne Hathaway. Gone was Stu's...
Look, can I help it if we're both turned on by xenophobia?
Gone was Stu's regular cooking segment,
yep,
where we would describe in mind-numbing detail how to make a suicide sandwich.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things ever.
Like to eat, right?
One of my favorite things ever on the Flophouse is Stuart's sandwich recipe. Yeah, those are kids eat when they can't get cut up hot dogs or dinosaur-shaped chicken nuggets.
Gone was the house cat. I understand every show must change and adapt, but if you could please add, say, 50 or 60 back episodes to the iTunes roster, that would be greatly appreciated.
Where we all have mustaches, our hair's a little thicker, we wear a lot more t-shirts
on
them.
To explain about the house cat, he's actually been on sabbatical for a while, and then he stopped returning our calls.
Yeah, he got a grant. He got a grant for awesomeness studies.
He's traveling the world to see how different cultures handle awesomeness.
He's auditioning for the big leagues. Apparently, there's other bad movie podcasts that are super popular.
Whoa.
And they want him out of
I'm
all
not surprised.
Three of us.
He's the breakout star. Of all the sound effects you can hear on a flop, on a podcast, he's the breakout star. Uh-oh! Uh-oh, kid is pretty good, too. Don't worry, uh-oh, kid. You'll get your chance in the spotlight.
But Ben, middle name withheld, Newman says, P.S. Stewart's recommendations are the only ones I pay any attention to.
Whoa.
Sorry.
Dan only recommends the popular tween films of the moment, and the racist Elliot just recommends whatever he thinks will make him sound pretentious.
I don't know why I'm racist all of a sudden.
As I have now watched and enjoyed Castle Freak and Invisible Maniac,
it's on to Head of the Family.
Start a new regular feature where Stu recommends different films that I could also watch. PPS. PPS.
In addition to the one where he recommends Head of the Family and Castle Freak and Invisible Maniac.
PPS. Here's a picture I drew of April O'Neil with a low-cut top that I thought Stuart might like. And I printed it out. Here you go.
Man, she looks like a picture, babe. Is that a turtle there?
Picture of April O'Neil with a low-cut top.
Oh, nice. It looks like she's questioning that turtle, and that turtle is turning away from her low-cut top.
I'd like to see also, Stuart.
I would like to see Exhibit A.
Wait, is she in,
Exhibit
like,
April?
Why is she in, like, a padded room?
She looks like...
I assume because she's pointing a microphone at a turtle, not like a Ninja Turtle, just a turtle.
The implication...
She's gone insane, right?
The implication is that Shredder has been...
Ninja Turtles never existed, that this was a figment of her imagination.
A figment of her sexy, low-cut imagination.
I think it's clearly evidence that Shredder and Krang have completed a campaign of gaslighting where they've slowly driven April O'Neil crazy
in order
to earn her, I guess, inheritance?
She was the turtle's Achilles heel. Yeah, her the jewelry that her aunt left her.
Yeah, but I mean, I can put a link to Ben Newman's blog where he has that picture.
It's a very accomplished picture.
That distasteful picture.
Very accomplished picture of a child's cartoon star with a low-cut top.
Yeah.
I have a new background for my cell phone. Thanks. So what do we do now?
Now is the point.
We're still trying to figure out what that movie was. It's not Mystery Men.
Is this when we congratulate each other for being great, or did we just do that?
Stuart, you're pretty awesome.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Even though you injured yourself going down a black diamond Widowmaker hill on your skis.
Inaccurate, but
on a single ski.
Oh, that's right. Dan is – everyone should know Dan's injured while doing this podcast.
Although
he was during the last podcast also.
During
Total Recall?
He
wasn't. He was suffering from a serious case of hot dogging.
That's right. You weren't injured yet. Yeah, Dan's on the DL right now.
I tore my ACL. So any sympathetic tweets?
Take a little pressure off
what happens.
But don't be sympathetic because as Stuart said, he was hot dogging. He was showboating. He does what he calls the upside down propeller ski, where
he
flips up in the air and spins around like his skis are propeller blades.
But I mean, like I injured myself, and unlike in Hot Dog the movie, say, or Ski
or Hot
School,
Dog the food,
or Ski Patrol, Hot ski bunnies did not swarm me afterwards to offer me sympathy.
I find that incredibly hard.
But actually, real bunnies did swarm you and started biting you.
They bit me. They thought I was a carrot, which is weird.
Well, you shouldn't have been wearing a carrot costume. That's what you tripped over when you were skiing.
Yeah. Well, there's no way you're going to be able to win that kickball championship unless the leg brace you got makes your leg extra strong for kicking.
It's rookie of the year style.
Yep, it's rookie of the year too. Soccer this time. Except instead of a kid, it's a guy in his early 30s who is mournfully sighing
early
all the time.
Early 30s is charitable, right? Mid-30s. What, like 42, 52?
No, it's not.
52.
I mean, early 30s is charitable, but only in that I am more of a mid-30s
Well,
man.
I was feeling charitable.
I'm on the early side of mid-30s.
You're injured and you still haven't been able to get out of that carrot costume.
Yeah. Let's leave my totally accurate in real life actual injury behind and go on to recommendations.
That was your Dan in real life update. Yeah. In real life, Dan's ACL is torn.
Dan is prepping for surgery. But in podcast life, let's go
So now
on.
We're going to talk about recommendations, and I'm going to barge ahead because I've mainly just been watching... Yeah.
I know what you're going to recommend.
I've mainly been watching awards season stuff, and instead I'm going to recommend a little movie we saw as... Oh. The Flophouse was lucky enough...
I wanted to recommend
last week
this too.
To go see a double feature hosted by movie director Don Coscarelli at the 92Y Tribeca, the home of the Flophouse live shows.
Mm-hmm.
And
see us there February 1st.
I was super excited to get my poster available signed
now
by Don Coscarelli and get to talk to him.
92YTribeca.org.
So
February
I would like
1st, don't tell her it's me.
A little movie called Phantasm.
Oh, not the new one. Okay. No, well, I'll recommend the other one then.
Yeah. I want to recommend Phantasm because if you haven't seen it in a while, which is crazy. You should watch it at least every couple of weeks. It is a very
strange
movie. It unfolds
new things every time you watch it.
It's like an onion, yeah.
If you ever have an opportunity to see it in the theater, you should take it because it is a great, very strange movie, very slow. Angus Grimm gives an amazing career-making performance.
It was a career-making performance that his career came out of it.
It's a movie that, as the I don't remember the name of the presenter.
Phantasm.
No, the presenter at the
Kevin, Kevin Marr. He was interviewed by Kevin Marr, who's a friend of ours.
He made a great point that he was quoting somebody when he said that it's a movie that never pauses to kind of explain anything, and that's one of the things that makes it like a great movie, and also helps it, I think, in a way, live up to the title of Phantasm, and that it
feels like a dream.
It feels like a dream.
A nightmare, if you will.
Oh, no. It's the greatest dream I've ever had.
Oh, really?
All right. Well, to buffer what I assume are going to be both Don Coscarelli recommendations,
yeah,
I'm going to step in the middle.
Oh, okay, because I was going to...
No, I'm going to step in the middle and recommend something just like...
Another Don Coscarelli movie?
Don Coscarelli sandwich. Yeah, exactly.
You can recommend Beastmaster?
I'm going to recommend something that is themed to the movie we watched.
Invisible Maniac.
The Odd Life... The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
You're recommending The Odd Life of Timothy Green?
It's themed to The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
Okay,
Swamp Thing? Like the beginning of The Odd Life of Timothy Green, where two expectant parents, or not expectant parents, but parents who wish they would have a
child, alive?
Bury what they want in a child out back, and then have a child suddenly appear.
Oh, The Odd Life of Timothy
Green.
Seems
like the beginning to a horror movie.
Yeah.
Like that is a horror movie beginning. And so
it's similar in some ways to Jan Svankmajer's Little Otik,
or as Stuart pointed out, Pet Sematary.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would like to recommend a movie that is also based on sort of the idea of expectant parenthood, but the horrific side of that. And I really enjoyed the movie Orphan, which has a bunch of crazy plot twist, like great cinematography, a good performances by Peter Sarsgaard and who's the lady in that?
Petra Sarsgaardia?
No. Jesus.
Stellan Skarsgård.
No.
Peter Stormare?
Lady in... Oh, God. She Vera Farmiga is in it.
Oh, from Up in the Air.
Yeah, and it has a...
And Time Limit Loop.
It has
movie.
A nutty third act twist that I won't spoil for you. But if you're looking for a horror movie that...
About children. About parenthood.
That is beautifully shot, better acted than you expect, and has a very weird denouement, then I recommend Orphan. But Elliot, what would you like to recommend?
Before my recommendation, I'd just like to mention how pleased I am that in one podcast, I have mentioned both Jan Svankmajer's Little Otik and Buford's Beach Bunnies. USA Up All Night staple. I will recommend the other movie that we saw in the Don Coscarelli double feature, which is his newest film, which I believe is on video on demand right now, but is going to be in theaters January 25th. And that is a little movie called John Dies at the End.
Or J-Date.
Yeah. Or J-Date, if you shorten it.
Endorsed by all three of the floppers.
Based on
say.
The book of the same name. And I have to admit, I haven't read the book. When we went to the screening, I was there to see Don Coscarelli and to see Phantasm in the theater. And,
to see me get really excited.
And to see Stuart get super excited and just
a Phantasm boner.
To be unable to keep it in his pants because he's so excited. To have a fangasm. And I was like, I'll sit through John Dies at the End, and I really liked it a lot. It's this very like bizarre, silly comedy, science fiction, thriller, horror, adventure movie, and it's got a great cast. Glenn Turbett's in it, Paul Giamatti's in it, and Don Coscarelli does a great job with it.
Angus Grimm's in it.
Angus Grimm has a scene in it, and it's really fun and funny, and I enjoyed it a lot. And it's a small, lower budget movie, so. Mm-hmm. I'd say give it a try, and if you like it, tell other people too so it can get some success.
Yeah, and you recommended it to a friend at work, and he also really enjoyed it. So,
yeah, that's true.
Like, it's not just crazy Flophouse hosts.
Not just the Flophouse hosts.
I feel like it's the. I mean, both the book and the movie, because I feel Don Coscarelli has a talent at picking authors whose work he can bring across in.
Yeah, like Joe Lansdale with Bubba Hotep.
But he there's. It feels almost like the Joss Whedon Buffy universe if all the heroes were kind of assholes.
That's true. Yeah. If you thought that the problem with Buffy was everyone was too likable,
yeah,
then John Dies at the End might be for you.
I mean, that is the problem I have with Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Too friendly?
Everyone's a little too friendly.
All right.
Who's the bad guy?
Exactly. You need a villain. Uh-huh. So I think
who's Batacle?
I think they should have an escaped serial killer who kills a different cast member every week until there's none left. Then it turns out it was all a dream.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah, but it was the dream of a dog. And the dog has to go on an amazing adventure to save his owner, who's just been blasted into space.
Barks and Stab Creation.
The new show, Barks and Stab Creation, starring Eddie the Dog and Peter Stormare as Stab. And so I will recommend John Dies at the End.
All right, guys.
Three recommendations. Two Don Coscarelli. Is it my birthday? No, that's in a while.
I think this has been a successful night, guys.
I mean,
we recorded, right? Didn't fuck up, right?
Yeah, this isn't a Babylon AD situation, right?
I hope not.
The fabled lost episode.
All that's left now is to sign off, and I will do that now for the Flophouse.
Wait, hold on. What do we do
now?
No,
wait, hold on.
Wait, hold on. I'm not ready yet. No, not ready. Okay.
But
for the Flophouse.
No, I'm the Flophouse.
For the Flophouse.
No.
I've been Dan McCoy.
Oh, wait, did he do it?
I've been Dan McCoy.
Stuart.
And me, Elliot.
Good night, everyone.
Perfect ending.
Flawless ending. Angus Scrimshaw.
Boy.
You play a good game, boy.
You play a good game, boy. That's my variation on the character.
Uh-huh. He's a little bit more feminine.
I gotta bring a little something of my own to it.
You play a good game, boy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's not as cool as... you guys are ruining it.
Phantasm.
He just shouts the name of the movie. And, yeah. Phantasm 3, Lord of the Dead.
And this is my voice for the silver balls. Yeah, what's over here? Oh, go over there. Oh, spikes out. Oh, stick it there. Drill in your face. Oh.
Spikes in your face.
Just drill in. Oh, get some blood out of here. I'm a ball. Woo.